Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Champion Reads podcast, where we cover best-selling books and conversations about them. Obviously, everything that comes from this show is our own personal opinions and the things that we learn from reading incredible best-selling books and interviews and conversations. And, you know, sometimes we'll even review really cool articles or whatever it might be. And our goal here is to, you know, just expound upon what we're learning, just like we would if we were going to book club to talk about, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird. I said How to Kill a Mockingbird. That's a different book. That is a good book. I was just at a coffee shop called Atticus in Park City, and it's based on the Atticus character from To Kill a Mockingbird. But, you know, our goal here is to expound on our own personal ideas and thoughts. No shape, way, or form do we give financial investing advice or anything like that. No longer are we getting into the specifics about how to live your life, but we just share our own personal opinions. And if you resonate with them, we love it. If you don't resonate with them, we want to hear from you because your feedback's important to us. And we also want to let you know that you can reach out to us and our team by sending us an email. You can send an email to info@mychampioncircle.com, and our team will be able to respond. And you know, if you have questions or if you have suggestions, we'd love to put it here on the air. So if you send me an email, if you send us an email, we would love to address it. So thank you for that. And again, thank you for your support. This is obviously something we continue to grow. It's something we want to continue to monetize because it is great value and good information. Plus, nowhere else can you get a really fun group of people who want to summarize books for you and discuss different topics. And I'm excited because, you know, today in today's session, just wanted to welcome my co-host and creator of this podcast, Mr. Ian Sturmer. Ian, welcome. And today he did not do Ian dollar sign Sturmer, so he's no longer rapper today. But but today we're reviewing the book, and I'm going to hold up my cute little copy that I take everywhere with me. It's called The Four Agreements. And here, I'll open it up in presentation mode so everyone can see it. But The Four Agreements is a book written by Don Miguel Ruiz. And just in summary of it, it's based off ancient Toltec wisdom. And Toltec is a group of people, a tribe, you can say, from the regions of Central America, South America, and so forth. But the Toltec were known as the educated and the lovable. And these people were using valued truths their entire life and their entire existence, because it was something that kept them going. It gave purpose and information and value to their community. And so it's a great book, but it really is pretty simple. And today we want to cover a couple of concepts, because in the last segment we touched on the first two agreements that Don Miguel Ruiz touches on in The Four Agreements. And those were, I'm just going to flip open my book here so that I pronounce it all correctly. But the first agreement is be impeccable with your word. And last episode, if you didn't watch it, go and listen to that, because we did get into some really great discussions about integrity and sticking to your commitments and accountability and all of the great stuff. And it was really impactful. The second agreement was don't take anything personally. And we wanted to get into a deeper conversation about it. We ran out of time last time, but now under further review, we feel like, you know, that one just speaks for itself. As you take things personally, you're taking on a selfish persona. And, you know, allowing things to just breeze over, or to address them professionally, or being very communicative, are all positive ways of handling that. But these agreements, those first two, at least, being impeccable with your word and don't take anything personally, do fall hand in hand. And they've helped a lot of people. They've helped me. I mean, for sure. Like, I'm an emotional person. A lot of people know that I wear my emotions, my beliefs, my faith. I wear it on my sleeve, and it is something that I have worked on, and somebody who is always open to feedback, but has sometimes taken things personally. I've worked on that, and it's something that I take it personal. I've taken it personal as a mission of mine to not take things so personally, but to remove emotion and to insert logic and to see the side that other people see. And that's basic How to Win Friends and Influence People 101 class. Like it's good information to help you in just a good life lesson. But today's information, go ahead, Ian, if you want to add something there.
Yeah, I was actually just going to say that really goes into the next topic of not making assumptions. When you stop taking things personal, you kind of stop assuming that they're talking about you, and you start looking at it logically. What's the whole situation? So I think just going to point out those two really flow together. Then I'll turn it back to you to introduce the next side of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can stay unmiked or unmuted just because it's the two of us today. But, I totally agree with you. And that is the third agreement, is don't make assumptions. And I don't want to steal anyone's thunder, but I'll just share what most people say about assumptions, which is, you know what they say about assumptions is it makes an ASS out of you and me. And, every time someone tells me that, I get mad. I take it personally because I'm like, what else am I to expect? But I love this because it's such an innate feeling and we do it so often. And there's a reason why people make assumptions, is because we manifest that people do what we think they're going to do, or things are going to happen the way things should happen. But, as someone who's been planning and running events for 30 something years, man, it's like nothing can ever go perfectly. Nothing can. Like, you, no matter how much preparation you put and planning you put into something, it's not going to go smooth. There's always going to be rough edges. But I'll read to you just kind of the first part of this, and then I'd love to get into that idea of don't making assumptions, because you know what it means when you make assumptions. We have a tendency to make assumptions about everything. The problem with making assumptions is that we believe that they are truth. And that's a great starting place for this conversation, because again, when you assume, you expect, and that expectation is a reality. So again, it is connected to the feelers. People do assume that people will do things or do what they say, but in reality, humans are humans, and we're all just walking around existing with complications and things going on in our cabezas. That's French for head. I'm just kidding. It's Spanish. And we have stuff. Like, we have stuff going on. I mean, simply said, everybody has something going on. And that's just kind of where I wanted to lead off with it, because again, it's hard to not make assumptions, but when it comes from a place of thinking and expecting truth, you've got to realize what is truth and what is not truth. And truth is things that come to pass. Non-truths are things that have not come to pass yet. And so there's kind of a differentiation there. I don't know. What do you think, Ian?
Yeah. So as we're doing this, I actually am going to jump right into an example, which is odd for me, I know. when we're making assumptions, we're kind of putting ourselves into that position, and rather than looking at it, like you said, logically. And just thinking of my wife, she'll read an email, and she'll call me and say, I can't believe this person said this. And she'll read a section of the email in the most sarcastic tone of voice possible. Now, when I read the email, I read it in normal tone of voice and it was fine. An example of one that came up is her boss listed thank yous to several people in helping to close a deal. And my wife's job is to coordinate a lot of the paperwork, to make sure it's all in order, and to make sure the final package is the way it should be. And it involves quite a bit. And he thanked her for pushing the papers through. Mm. Yeah, I'm a paper pusher. That's all I do. I said, no, I mean, he's saving time by not listing out 20 duties, but he took time to mention you. You know, it's a positive. But she went on the assumption that he was insulting her, that he was putting her down, that he was belittling her position because of a bunch of things in the back of her mind and different experiences. But she took all of that to herself. And that's, you know, don't take it personal and don't make assumptions, I think, are so closely tied together. If you assume someone is saying something negative about you, you're going to hear something negative, whether they're really saying something negative or not. And if you assume somebody's saying something positive about you, they're going to do that. You're going to assume it's a positive thing, unless it's really overtly negative.
Yeah.
But basing on those assumptions, the more you can get rid of that idea and look at each new situation really with fresh eyes. Okay, now that I said that, I feel like I'm saying the whole wrong direction in something.
No, not at all.
Experiences. You know, you need to take into account your knowledge and your experiences and all that and interactions with people.
Yeah.
But you need to have an open mind, I think, with every conversation, every situation as well.
I agree with you. And that openness, which is a theme that keeps coming up for us in these conversations, which I love. I would also, and you sparked an idea in my brain for this discussion, but I agree. Like context is everything. So especially if you don't want to take things personally, because you need to kind of understand where people are coming from and be open to just things. You know, it's interesting that flexibility is another word coming to mind, because, you know, spontaneity is hard to master. We all dream of being spontaneous and just taking a trip, or, you know what, it's a Tuesday, why not crack open a bottle of root beer and enjoy it? You know, like spontaneity is good for the soul, but context and understanding and being open to scenarios is important. What you spurred in my brain, Ian, is there's a huge difference between the word assumption and the word expectation. And if you go along the lines of that phrase, like, you know what it means when you make assumptions, like it makes an ASS out of you and me. Like if you continue down that route, which I know I want to get away from, because I actually don't like that phrase either. But to get away from it, if you were to take this scenario and you started replacing the word assumption with expectations in your vocabulary, and rather than saying like, oh, you know, I assumed you knew, or I assumed that you did this, or I assumed that, or assumed this, you don't really look intelligent, nor does that conversation really put enough benefit to both parties. You're putting a lot of pressure on other people. But rather than doing that, because it can come across as a negative, but to spin it in more of a positive, using the word expectation can really be a benefit, because you now are establishing relationships, you're now establishing standards, and establishing expectations creates a particular degree of assumption. Is that right? So when you have a conversation, like Ian and I were together last night and we were talking about getting an office space in Ogden for one of our upcoming North Utah County Champion Circle events. Okay. And rather than telling like Ian, like, Ian, like, I assumed you were working on this, like that already implies a negative, like, oh, I assumed, but you weren't, like, tell me why you weren't do that. Like that gets into a negative. But when I can upfront and say, Ian, I love that that's something that you want to do. Can I expect you to reach out and find an office space or something like that? Like I'm using a very specific example, but it's just because it's top of mind, not because it's personally related to you, Ian, because I know we had a conversation about something last night, but
no worries.
But essentially, like when you change the vocabulary from assumption to expectation, there's a little bit more trust. And you see how that's a positive now rather than I just like assumed you did it. Like, what happened? You know, there's more of a positive spin on it. And I think that that's a really cool coaching tip and just an idea or a strategy for maybe our listeners to do. I love talking about, and there's a phrase, let me look it up real quick. There's a phrase I love, which is building an empowered vocabulary for success. And what that means is that you're taking things that you would normally say and you're replacing the words with a more intentional outcome. And so that's a recommendation I have for anyone is, and I'm going to start working on it myself, is rather than using the word assumption in my vocabulary, replace that as I over-communicate with people so that I can have expectations and those expectations can lead to great results. But anyways, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. You actually took this a direction that I had not assumed it was going to go. Sorry. My assumption thinking about this and looking through it was like, oh, if you assume other people are saying something negative or out to get you. And
right.
But there's a whole nother side that if you assume other people have a certain knowledge, a certain background, you assume they have they've accomplished a certain task. Mm. You assume they knew how to accomplish a certain, you know, you're again, putting an unfair expectation, to use your word, onto other people. And really what a lot of this comes down to is a mutual friend of ours made a comment one time that in reality, all we know is what happens inside our own head. Yeah. If I look at you, I can see you on the screen now. I can make guesses or assumptions about your thoughts, your feelings, your answers, whatever's going on. But in reality, that's all inside my head. It's all my interpretation of these signals. I have no way to truly know what you're thinking. And there's an example I've used before. So if I'm going to ask you a quick question, John, so think about this carefully. Do your parents love you?
Yes, they do.
How do you know that?
Because they told me.
I listened to the last presidential debate, and both of those people told me a lot of things that I don't. You know, your parents tell you things, they feed you, but as my son would remind me when he was in a bad mood, well, you have to by law. That doesn't prove you love me. It just means you don't want to go to jail for child neglect. There's no way to quantify and prove that your parents love you.
Right.
Obviously they do. You know that. But it's all based on what you're seeing inside yourself from it. And when you, that's kind of a over the top example maybe, but when you keep that in mind that, everything is based on your own interpretation. And when you know that, you can then look more logically at what people are doing and take yourself out of it, not take it so personal, and instead look just at what they're doing and at their situation and pay more attention to them than to yourself and your own interpretation of it. And I think that just clarifies everything in communication and builds that trust that is so important.
Oh man, I love that. And thank you for taking us in that direction. Cause I agree. I mean, I love this. This is, for me, this is impactful because there are a lot of connections and ties to this, particularly for me. And I think that example is important for people to understand. Of course your parents love you. But you know, that assumption could be the positive side of things, but you know, it's definitely based off of circumstances. You know, I wish this joke actually translated well into English, but there's a Tagalog joke and it's hilarious. Like if I share this joke, you know, a group of people will burst into laughter. It's fantastic. And the phrase is akala ko ito pero hindi pala. And what that gibberish means is I thought one thing, but apparently not. And they'll fill in the blank. it's kind of like a, here's your sign. Like, you know, you're a redneck when, like, that kind of thing. Like, it's hilarious culturally, but in English, it just doesn't translate that great. But it is like, I thought one thing, but it wasn't after all. And that's kind of the phrase that assumption means to me. Like, oh, I thought this, but I guess it didn't equate, which is why I always thought of it as a negative, because it wasn't something after all. Your assumption didn't align with reality. And I've always thought about that, but I want to go back. Cause as you were talking about something, you reminded me of a powerful principle. And so I think I've told this story before on the podcast, but I'll share it again. My wife always teases me. She says, oh, you're going to tell me that story again. Like, I've told it to her like 5 or 6 times before. It's usually like way more than that, but I just forget which stories I tell. So I preface with that, if I have told this story, I'm telling it again because of relevancy.
Yeah. Well, assume you've only told it 3 or 4 times.
You know, I've assumed that I've told it before, but I was super excited. I love Deepak Chopra. He's an incredible writer. Here's a book that Deepak wrote, and it's called The Book of Secrets. And I bought this book, super excited to read it. And I was on a I was on a work trip, and I was just like ready to go sit by the pool, relax, open up a book of Deepak, and just like pour in. And all of these expectations built up in my brain. Like, I can't wait to just get into hundreds of pages of this wisdom. And I'm not even outside of the introduction. Like, there's a prelude, whatever, introduction, and then there's chapter one. I didn't even make it to chapter one because I'm reading this, and Deepak says, right here, never, he says, okay, never doubt this. You are the most significant being in the world. Because at the level of the soul, you are the world. You do not have to earn the right to know. Your very next thought, feeling, or action can begin to uncover the deepest spiritual wisdom, which flows as pure and free as mountain water springs. It isn't possible for the self to keep secrets from itself forever, no matter how thoroughly we've been trained to believe this otherwise. That phrase, that you are the most significant being in the world because at the level of the soul, you are the world. That goes back to what you were originally saying, Ian. For me, it resonates because, wow, like, at the end of the day, you can only control what you've got in here. And that's all you can work off of. And I love that. And by the way, I haven't read a single page of this book other than up to the end of the introduction, because I read that and I went, I'm good. Like, that is exactly what I needed. And my pool time was then a nap by the pool rather than reading by the pool, because I got what I needed. My soul was fulfilled for that. But at its core, you know, I believe that too. And what you said is so true. Like, the only things we can control is what's going on in here, because that is our reality.
Yeah. I think it's, I always want to say Napoleon Hill. It's not, it's Dale Carnegie.
Mm, okay.
I believe, correct me, you probably know this quote, the positive mental attitude. So the only thing in the end, the only thing you have control of is your mental attitude. You can't control anything else in the world except for your own attitude. And if you have a positive mental attitude, expecting positive things, you'll probably see more positive things. If you have a negative mental attitude, you'll see more negative things. If you have a mental attitude that you know everything, then you won't learn much. I just had to point out with books, there's a great book called Never Eat Alone. And I read the title and thought, got it. I don't need to read this book. It told me everything I need to know right there. I made that assumption. And actually, you're the one who got me to read that book. And turns out there's a lot more to the book than just the title of Never Eat Lunch Alone. But so often we again, it's those assumptions. We assume we know what something means. We assume we know what someone else is thinking. We assume we know what we're doing. It's a big assumption I make incorrectly that I assume I know what I'm doing, and quite often find out I really don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And then I have to step back and learn from it. But you know, is it safe to say maybe an assumption is just making a conclusion without all of the information?
Absolutely. What a great definition.
So I guess I need to always know that there's more information in order to make that correct, you know, conclusion. Sorry, I'm again jumping into analogies, but have you ever heard of something called chaos theory?
No, not particularly.
So, chaos theory, it's a term in the world of physics, and it basically means that there's a certain amount that you just simply can't predict. And Jurassic Park, they try and explain that by dropping a drop of water on your knuckle and which direction it's going to roll. And the idea is there's so many different factors out there that you never know the outcome. And I listened to that and I thought, well, if you really knew all the factors and had the mathematical ability and the time to calculate them, you actually could figure out the answer to all of these things that truly seem random. There's actually laws behind them, but they get so complicated we can't figure them all out in our own minds. But this idea of assumptions, I guess if we know that we never have all the information and we have to leave a certain amount open in our minds to say, I don't know this part and I have to be open to what's going to happen. But I can, on the other hand, take all the information that I do have and I can put that into play to help predict the outcome of whatever situation. And I guess if we do everything we can to understand it, but also keep an idea that there's something we don't know that could completely change the outcome of whatever that situation is. I don't know if I just confuse myself with it, but I guess always knowing there's more that I don't know makes me eager to look for it. And again, to not take it personal because I'm not expected to know everything. So,
you know, I love this because you bring up a good point. I jokingly call myself a scientist, and I'm not a legitimate certified scientist. I don't have science in anything, but I call myself a scientist of human interactions because everything to me is an experiment. And I love that you brought that in because, you know, conclusions based off zero evidence is a terrible way to conduct experiments, right? And I appreciate that. And that actually like turned the light bulb on for me. So no, you didn't go off topic or anything for me. I think this is really conclusive. And I see it now. Like, I love that. The idea of an assumption is based on what we know. And I have learned that the more I learn, the less I know. But it doesn't create fear. It creates a yearning, a desire, an intention to learn more and to dive deeper and to get more specific. Napoleon Hill does talk about, you know, the mastering of specialized knowledge when it comes to learning anything and everything that you're working on or doing. And so when you focus on that concept, it's vital to take into consideration that what we don't know, we can't conclude. And unless the evidence points in that direction. So that's important, I think, I believe. And I look forward to kind of exploring it a little bit more. But there was one thought I had, but I think I lost it.
Well, let me jump in with something while you're catching it, sorry.
Yeah, please do, thank you.
That idea of having a piece open, always leaving a little section that we don't know. To jump into obscure analogies again, classical Chinese paintings. If you look at a classical Chinese painting, they have, you know, beautiful paintings, but up to the, usually the upper left or right hand corner, there's a blank space that kind of goes up to the sky, and there's an openness. There's no clouds or birds or trees or anything in that spot. And most classical Chinese paintings will have this feature. And the idea behind it is the artist cannot capture everything. So as a result, some of it is left to the imagination of the viewer to place in there what they feel is important. So even in here, an artist who's creating a painting themselves is acknowledging that they don't have everything. They can't assume that they have the ultimate answer of beauty. So they leave some open to the viewer to complete the painting for them. So I guess just I love that openness with assumptions. And I think I have John frozen on my screen. Okay, I hear you though.
Can you hear me?
I heard that, but it was silenced for a bit before then.
Okay. My screen is frozen, so I'm in no control. But man, I love all of that. If you can hear me, then I'll talk for a second.
You're good.
And Lauren, if you want to jump in, you're welcome to at any time. But I like that angle. And again, I like to think of it from the evidence and conclusiveness side. Otherwise, you know, you can just take it as it is, but you're so right, Ian. Like, a lot of this does intertwine with the other principles, the other agreements. And if you just make an agreement with yourself that, you know, I'm going to make sure that my word is impeccable. I'm going to make sure I'm integritous, and that I'm just not going to take things personally today. And also, you know, I'm going to be, I'm not going to make assumptions, but instead I'm going to, you know, be more communicative and create expectations in my life. You know, that those are great manifesting principles that you can share with anybody. And those are things that you can tell yourself in the morning. And, I think that's really cool. So, all that being said, I think that this is such a powerful concept for so many people. I'm going to do a pulse check. Can you guys still hear me? Because everything is frozen.
Yes.
Okay, cool. And I don't want to press anything to refresh without kicking this out. So any other thoughts on this? And Lauren, welcome. We're talking about the third agreement, which is don't make assumptions. Do you have any insight or context you'd like to add?
Yeah. Well, thanks for letting me jump in late.
No worries.
I'd say on don't making assumptions, there's a lot to be said in that, because half the time you're wrong when you're making assumptions, right? We tend to fill in those gaps of what we think rather than putting ourselves in somebody else's shoes on what they might be thinking. And so I just think it's a powerful lesson to learn to not assume somebody else's behavior is a certain due to a certain thing, or their thoughts are because they're premeditated type thing. And it's just been a powerful lesson in my life to learn and apply. And I'd say it saved a lot of my self grief and hurt feelings that weren't necessary once I was able to apply that in my life.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, thank you. I was going to jump in with something with that as we were talking, and surprise, another analogy came to mind to me.
Surprise.
But yeah, you know, if I'm walking down the street and someone says to me, "Nice shirt," I can assume that they like my shirt and I should wear it more. I can assume that they're mocking me and I need to change my shirt right away. I can assume that there's a problem with my shirt. Maybe there's a stain on it and I need to take care of that. I could assume that they're flirting with me and I need to either pursue or run away, depending on the situation from that particular one. you know, I can make all of these assumptions, but until I look down at my shirt and stop and think, is it a good shirt or not? You know, I have no way of knowing. If I'm just assuming what other people's intentions are, I don't think I'm going to be right half the time that you gave us, Lauren. You're giving me too much credit for that. I think I'm going to be wrong a lot more than half the time. At least I assume I will be. We've been making these jokes the whole time.
Yeah.
But it's if you're only basing it on your feelings about what somebody else is thinking or doing or saying, we're not getting the truth to it. We're taking it too personal to go into the last concept rather than seeing what actually is happening. I'm going to say something that goes against political correctness, but I think there's absolute truths. A shirt either looks good or it doesn't. It's a simple fact. And once I get rid of other opinions, then I'm confident in where I'm at rather than being stuck in opinions.
Right. Yeah. It's funny. It reminds me just yesterday I was rushing all day, taking care of kids stuff. And I was trying to get to a doctor's appointment on time. And as I was rushing out the door, I realized I hadn't eaten a true breakfast and I hadn't eaten lunch. But at that point, I know this is my body. If I eat something poorly at that point, like grab a hamburger or something on the way, I will feel sick. And so what did I do? I grabbed just some snacks from my pantry and I happened to grab the just rice cakes. You know, they're my favorite caramel rice cakes. And I was like, okay, this will be easy on my stomach till I can eat something better later. So I am eating in the car as I'm driving. I get to my kids' school. I pick them up, check them out. I'm rushing to the doctor's office. And I was on a highway, a 3-lane highway, and I was in the fast lane. And I was going faster than everybody else. I was speeding a little bit. But all of a sudden, this truck comes up behind me. And I do not know where he came from. He was just riding my tail. And naturally, I was just like, whoa, like, holy crap, dude, get off my butt. Like, that was my words. And so I move over into the middle lane. And as he passes me, it looked like he was mocking me, like, because I was shoving my face of rice cakes, right? Like, I was so starving. And he had his hand up like this. And he's looking at me while he's passing me. And my first thought was, what a jerk. Is he really making fun of me for eating? Like, you know, I was going faster than everyone else. It's not like I was dilly-dallying in the fast lane. And then I was like, well, and little does he know it's a rice cake, not a hamburger. You know, I'm just thinking of all these things in my mind. And I didn't say them out loud because my kids were there. And then I was like, why do I even care what this guy was doing? You know, like, who cares if he's mocking me? And then a couple stoplights come and he's still like in the same area. And I was like, I just want to see what he looks like, you know. So I go up on the left side and I just glance over. And he's just like talking to himself or on the phone, right? It's like, okay, he was probably really just moving his hand or something. I doubt he was making fun of me for eating in my car, you know? But my first initial thoughts were like, what a jerk for making fun of me. Like, he's just implying that I'm shoving my face while I'm driving here. Like, to him, I was going slow in the fast lane, you know? Anyway, it was like a good 5-10 minutes. And I was like, I just have to stop assuming, like, how stupid of me to sit and get this whole scenario in my head, you know? And I was like, okay, I just got to chill out and let it go. But really, like, I hadn't done that in a while. And I had to catch myself like, wow, I'm sitting here saying this guy's a jerk. I'm sitting here assuming all this bad stuff that he's making fun of me, you know, and trying to justify, yeah, I'm shoving rice cakes in my mouth, but I haven't eaten all day. So it's just a good reminder hearing this, that happened yesterday too. And I was just like, okay, I have to catch myself, you know? So it's over the littlest things. We can fill those gaps in our mind with either something positive or we can go down a rabbit hole. And we have to be careful what we're going to do with that.
I find myself so often believing that I am so smart that I know what everyone else is thinking and their motivation and their background. I had a psychology class many years ago, and they showed us four pictures of teenage girls. And one was laughing, one was sobbing, one was screaming, and I forget what the other one was doing. And they had to say, well, what are these girls feeling? We went through each one, and they zoomed out, and it was four girls standing next to each other at a Beatles concert. And they were all in the same situation, listening to the Beatles, and that was their facial expressions. But, you know, I was smart enough that I knew exactly what was going on in every one of their minds based on a snapshot with no context whatsoever. I need to quit assuming that I'm smart. I should assume I don't know and just start at that point on everything.
No, I think that's fantastic. And always driving is a great example of assumptions. You know, we just assume that everyone else is just bad drivers and that we're the best driver, you know. man, that brought up so much for me. I love that. I wanted to share a quick thought, and then we can kind of wrap this up, because I think that we're definitely covering a really great depth on this topic. But you know, when you worry about something, you worry about things that you don't have answers to. Like, I'm worried, like, my kids are okay, or I'm worried that I'll fail the test. All you're doing is you're assuming the worst, and it isn't the greatest feeling. You know, worry and anxiety and doubt is just assuming the worst. And that is something that we can work on. Anyone can work on. It's something that we can have an understanding of and be aware of. And as you just kind of, Brian Tracy used to say, you know, take a checkup from the neck up, like take an evaluation of things around you and where you're at in the present. And just by being present, you know, just in the moment, can help you understand, like, am I assuming, am I over, you know, dramatizing things? Am I creating the unknown in my own mind? And it does come back to, you know, being up here. And what I love about the four agreements is, even though the first one is be impeccable with your word, it's an intention that starts with your brain before it leaves your mouth. So before you speak, the first agreement is using your words, which come from your brain. Taking things personally is a choice you can make inside, you know, and also making assumptions. Those are all things you can control within. And that's why I think this is great wisdom, because again, if you woke up every day and said, today I'm going to be impeccable with my word, I am going to make sure that I do what I need to do to take everything as it is and not take things personally. And then I'm also going to, you know, not assume. I'm just going to you know, expect or do the right things with my thoughts and feelings. And I think that that's just really great wisdom. And then if you guys have like 4 minutes, you know, the fourth agreement to kind of wrap this book up is the fourth agreement is always do your best. And we could talk for hours on this, or we could talk for a few minutes, but essentially it makes sense to me. First agreements are vital to the control of what we do with. Always do your best is just focus on eating. So I don't know what's going on, but anyways, I definitely like feel like to live by those standards, you can find a lot of happiness and also a lot of value in your life by always that will make sense and will leave you satisfied, rather than, you know, confused, dissatisfied, angry, and all of the other list of negative emotions.
I think we lost John for a minute.
I think so.
But no, I agree. If you're waking up every day with the intention of doing your best, then it definitely puts you ahead of the game already. You know, we still have those moments where we will have to consciously make a choice to do our best rather than go down a rabbit hole of guessing what other people are thinking and doing. But if we wake up every day with the intention that this is just part of who we are, we're not going to assume the worst of people, and we're just going to wake up and do our best every day. It all kind of falls in the line, right? And
yeah,
I love that.
I think to tie, again, this always do your best with assumptions, I think we need to avoid making assumption of what the definition of best is. And I'm going to put John on the spot for a second again. Laura and I were able to attend a keynote speech he did yesterday, and he shared a story about being in the decathlon and wanting to do his best in the decathlon. And hopefully I don't offend you by saying this, John, but he did the pole vault, which was not his best event. And he stopped at one point in the pole vault and did not attempt to do more in the pole vault, because to do best out of the 10 events in the decathlon may mean not doing as good in one so that you can do better in others. If you go all out and spend 100% of your energy on your first event in the decathlon, you're going to do poorly in the others. So doing your best may not necessarily mean you're going to get the top outcome for each thing you're doing. And it may not, you know, some of the best people I've seen in races are those clips you love of the person who trips and this person behind him stops and picks him up. I think they're the best runners. They didn't even cross the finish line. Excuse me, but they're the best one. So don't assume best is the same for every person or the same definition of what we're doing. When someone else thinks they're doing their best, may be different from what we think their best should be. But if we stop taking it personally, stop making assumptions and let them do their best, then I think we can all learn and grow by seeing each definition of best.
I love that. To add to it, I was watching a video by Mel Robbins, and she was talking about this very thing. Everybody has a different best. We all have different tools in our toolbox. And just because what we're doing seems to be the best doesn't mean somebody else isn't doing the best with what they have. And so you just can't assume and get in the space of pretty much judging other people. Even if it directly affects your feelings or something, you can always take a step back and say, okay, that maybe that's the best that they could do, but I have a choice in how I'm going to respond and act. So.
I love that. And I appreciate the concept of, you know, your best doesn't mean you're on the podium of the Olympics, right? Your best is your best. And I think that's a great example, but I'll finish with this as long as my internet's working great. I'm having really weird issues today. I got to reset my computer, but want to share that, you know, when you set a standard for yourself, you can live by that. And don't create impossible standards, but create standards that motivate you, inspire you, and help you. Not the standards that cause a spiral of decline in your life in many areas. So, you know, make sure that you set standards that drive you to do your best. And you can do your best in anything, and your best is your best, which is a redundant phrase, but it is very applicable when you think about it, in the fact that when you do your best, you can be proud of that. I made my bed this morning. I did my best, and that makes me feel good. It makes me feel productive. It makes the room aesthetically clean and awesome, and it leads to a bunch of awesome positive stuff. Even if I did it poorly, you know, people can critique how I make the bed, but I did it and I met my standard and I'm good to go. So I think that's just valuable advice for all of us. So the Toltec wisdom is definitely values and principles that you can apply in your life as well, if you choose to. And these are not the only way to live your life, but they are valuable principles that can shape and shift and give you other accomplishments and a better attitude, as well as feelings surrounding your life. So Any other final words, guys, as we kind of wrap up this book? And I feel excited to jump into another book coming up, but I wanted to ask if you guys wanted any final thoughts about just the overall perspective of doing your best or the four agreements.
Let me just throw in doing your best. I think the greatest example of that is when you see a young child who presents to you something that they've done and it looks terrible, but they are so proud and we are so proud of them, even though it doesn't look anything like a horse, and you have to ask them what it is to find out it's a horse in the drawing, but they've done their best. They're proud of their best. They're happy to show it off, and we can find joy in complimenting that child and that child's effort. I think we lose that as they get older, and we need to, you know, keep being excited for everyone doing their best, even if it's not good. Best doesn't necessarily mean good. It just means it's the best. They tried. And in our own efforts, the same thing. We'll fail, but if we tried our best, it's the next steps that are more important. So,
I love that. I've just enjoyed these topics. So thanks for having me on.
Well, I love it. Well, as we kind of wrap this book up, I just want to invite the team to take a vote. If you guys will look at the private chat, I listed the remaining books and topics we planned on covering this year. And, you know, we hit no particular order. There's a few books in mind that we can cover. If you guys want, you can type your vote in the chat and we can announce it here in 2 minutes as we bring this session to a close. These number 6 through 12 are just kind of the order we had it on the calendar, but we can go in any order. Awesome. Love that. So as we share this again, guys, we want to invite you to reach out to us and to, you know, ask questions or share your own insight. What are you learning what are you learning as you listen to these books or you listen to our conversations or you read them yourself? And we want to hear from you because your information and your context and your opinions matter. And a lot of this information, we can dive into deeper and get into some really great discussions. Personally and selfishly, the three of us or the four of us, when Willie's on here, we get a lot out of these conversations. And it's so refreshing to just express and to dive deep and to talk about things. And honestly, this is our book club. You know, Champion Reads is our personal book club that we broadcast to the world for their amusement. But this is definitely something that gives us a sense of feeling and exploring and really expressing based on concepts that are hidden as beautiful little Easter eggs and gems in all the books we capture. Well, the votes are in, guys, and we know what we're going to be reading next month. I'm really excited about this. I agree with the votes, which is why I'm casting my similar vote. The next book that we're going to read, oh, I love this book. It's a book called The Go-Giver. And this is a fantastic, fantastic read. I recommend it to everybody. And if you want to go grab a copy on Amazon or barnesandnoble.com or whatever, grab a copy, The Go-Giver. Follow along with us. Send us an email if you would like to share any information or insights on your own findings to info@mychampioncircle.com. And oh man, I can't wait to dive into The Go-Giver, but what a great book. And just off the top of my head, because it's not in front of me, who is the author of The Go-Giver? I got to remember. Bob, right? Bob something. There you go. Yeah, he's getting up to look at it. I appreciate it. I should know this, but I think it's Bob Berg.
Yeah, Bob Berg.
Okay, good. Okay.
John David Mann.
Oh, yeah. He, cool. Co-authored with him. Bob Berg. I have a great story about Bob Berg, but I'll wait till that episode to tell that story. So, just like Ian has examples and ideas, I have stories. Here we go. The Red Book. Perfect. The Go-Giver. Awesome.
And you can get a copy for as little as $4.69 on the internet.
Wow. Yeah, no excuse. You can grab this book for cheap and you can grab that book for inexpensive. So love it.
There's even one for $1.99 on a used bookstore.
Oh man, I love that. Well, guys, we appreciate you. we're grateful, and we hope that you'll join us on the next episode and join us in the next month of September as we jump through a incredible read through the book, The Go-Giver by Bob Berg. So thank you guys. Appreciate you both. And we'll see you next time.